This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Nicole, thank you for the PayPal saying you make my day. I'm glad I make your day, and I'm always going to make your day. Until I die.
Hi, I'm Madison Malone Kircher, and you're listening to ICYMI, in case you missed it, Slate's podcast about internet culture. As you can probably tell, I am alone here today. Rachel is not here to record with me, which, honestly, rude of her not to welcome me back with open arms while blasting a track from the seminal film classic, The Lizzie McGuire Movie. But not to worry, Rachel will still be in your ears today on the show. Also, since it's just me, it does mean you are all spared, at least for now, a conversation about Elon Musk buying Twitter. Because without Rachel, that conversation is just a monologue, and we all know no one wants that. So, Rachel and I recently recorded this interview with journalist Jessica Lucas, who wrote a story for Input Mag about a bizarre and alarming? Yeah, bizarre and, let's say, alarming pocket of culture that has emerged on TikTok. We'd like you to meet William White. William's a 22-year-old Canadian guy who rocketed to fame on TikTok. His account is at Whitey18, that's Whitey with two Ys. He has 1.9 million followers, but the thing is, they're not the followers you might think a handsome 22-year-old guy would have on TikTok. White has been very, very savvy about cultivating this mass of middle-aged women who fawn over him and, frankly, have gotten a little too obsessed with him as he poorly lip-syncs songs from the 1980s, aka songs of their youth, salad days. On the show today, Jessica is here to tell us about how this seemingly sweet fandom has taken some very dark turns, why these women are so intense about their adoration of White, and how much money seems to be involved in the whole thing. Spoiler alert, it's a lot of money. We'll be back with Jessica and Rachel after a short break.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Today, we are joined by journalist Jessica Lucas to discuss her incredible piece in Input Magazine about the 22-year-old influencer William White and the dramatic fandom of Gen X women who have formed around him. Hi, Jessica. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jessica, how did you first hear about this story? How did William come into your life?
So I wish I could say it was from the TikTok algorithm, but I was actually spying on people's conversations on Twitter, as I'm sure you guys do sometimes as well. And there was this woman and she was talking, you know, about how Will changed my life and Will's awakened my sexuality and I feel young again. And I'm like, who's Will? What's going on here? And there was just this entire thread devoted to this man, all of these women. They have his face as their profile pictures. They've got names like, I'm Will's left foot. Like, you know, kind of like a Chuck Powell Newick, but more devoted is very strange. But I mean, when I first found it, I thought it was really wholesome. I was like, look at these women who are so excited about being seen sexually in their 40s. Look how positive they are, this community they've built. And then I lifted the lid and it became much more horrific very quickly.
Who is William White? Very briefly, how would you describe this guy?
Physically, he's like every 80s heartthrob face morphed. He just looks like a blend of like Patrick Swayze and a bunch of other guys that these women lusted after in their teens and early 20s. He lip syncs often not in time to 80s ballads on TikTok and kind of flounces around in front of the camera, and also does a lot of live sessions with these women where he tells them that he loves them or sometimes spits on command. It can go from wholesome to dirty very quickly. And that's him in a nutshell, I think.
So now that we kind of have a picture of who William White is.
A very moist picture.
That was an excellent way to describe the fandom, actually.
That was actually moist. The next question is, could you tell us about his fandom? And I guess moist is the way we're starting off.
So for context, they're just it's kind of gross. They're obsessed with any sort of wetness to do with his mouth. So when he gets water all over his beard, recently they've been sexualizing a picture of him. I don't even know what he's eating, but it like spurted. They're obsessed with that now.
What do you think it is that White is offering these women that other influencers aren't? Why has he attracted this Gen X fandom when that's not really the pool other influencers of his ilk are drawing from?
Because he's welcomed them. Target is quite a strong word, but he has, you know, he's used these 80s ballads. He's not really doing anything modern. He's not doing these overcomplicated thirst traps. And he's making them feel seen. All of them truly believe they have this connection with him through a screen, and that he does see them as sexual people, and he does see them as fun and interesting, and no one else is really doing that.
It's really kind of giving Christian Grey 50 Shades of Grey, in that it's targeting an audience that previously hasn't really been targeted. Like, you're seeing what is basically a lack being filled with William White's presence.
Absolutely. And I think it came along at a certain time as well. You know, when he first appeared in 2021, I mean, we're talking about women who were still being very cautious about pandemic regulations and things like that, because they have families and children. A lot of them are often caring for older relatives as well. And they were isolated, and all of a sudden they had a space on TikTok and they had a hot guy to talk about. And it brought a lot of people light in a dark time, and then just descended into gross, moist locker talk and insanity.
Jessica, you just brought up a really great point. Do you feel like that profound isolation that these women, along with, I mean, so many of us, were experiencing in this time, in some ways insulated William White from the worst aspects of fandom?
I think he, and this is a big point of contention, I think he does insulate himself, or is perhaps insulated by others. I know he wasn't very press shy when he first shot to fame, whereas now it's very much he doesn't want to talk. He'll disappear from social media for a few days. He's insulating himself from it.
Why do you think that is?
Because a lot of this behavior is indirectly encouraged. I mean, you only have to look at the man's Twitter. They call his tweets their texts. So he'll put out a "I love you" or "good morning," and you're talking hundreds of replies from people telling them about their day.
So a big element of this story, and the thing that sort of dropped my jaw to the floor, is the money aspect, because this guy is just rolling in it. Do you think part of the reason that the fandom has exploded in the way that it has, and also supports him financially in the way that they do, is because of the age demographic he's targeting, right? I don't think of like a 16-year-old who's thirsting over some guy in the hype house as having the disposable income that it seems some of these women are throwing at William White.
Absolutely. It's definitely an age thing where they do have, I suppose, the luxury of being able to spend on him in this way. I guess in a similar way to older men who spend quite lavishly on younger women, although not usually quite in the same way. In fact, one of the first group funds that was raised for Will White was called the Sugar Mama Fund, and it was later renamed.
One of the examples of the money at the kind of White fandom's disposal came up in your piece when you described this TikTok Live battle week in March, where he took home like $76,000 For listeners who are kind of unfamiliar, what exactly is this like live battle? Where does the money come from? How does it work? What's going on?
I wish I knew, to be honest. So I will explain it to you, but I still don't know why it exists other than to just make TikTok and influencers money. It's nothing but a money grabbing scheme. But essentially, you will have a split screen of two influencers and they can do whatever they want. So in the context of Will White and what you would call his peers on the platform, there's a lot of dancing to music and sometimes taking off your top, and the whole point of this is to get your fans to donate TikTok gifts, and your fans can buy TikTok gifts by exchanging real life money for coins which are valid on TikTok, and then they use the coins to buy the gifts, which are called things like rainbow puke, or I think one of the biggest ones you can get is a lion. But it's all about who can rack up the most gifts and therefore rack up the most earnings.
We are number one by 200K. Guys, thank you so much. Gifters, thank you so much. You guys went off there. We had Maria going off, Janer, Stacy's mom, Karina.
Nicole. Speaking of earnings, Rachel, you said that he took home $76,000, but Jessica, how much money did his fans give during this particular live in total? Because TikTok took a cut, right?
They do take a cut. And it's also up for debate because the price of TikTok coins varies from country to country and also where they buy it. But roughly about $234,000 in a week. And this is not just it as well. I mean, this is on top of the monthly allowance. This is on top of regular PayPal donations and TikTok gifts every week. And they've raised thousands for charity as well.
You just said a really interesting phrase, considering that William White is a grown-ass 20-something man. And that phrase is monthly allowance. What?
Yeah, it's designed to fund his budding modeling and acting career so that he has time to audition. No one has heard of any auditions he's been on. I don't know what to tell you. It's there for a reason.
But who's giving it to him? Who are the metaphorical TikTok mom and dad who are giving him this monthly allowance?
So hard to say, because Whitey Nation, if you will, I know it sounds like a white nationalist group, it is just the name of the fandom.
Every single time I read it in your piece, I was like, do they understand what they're doing right now?
No. They did try and rebrand at one point as Dick Army was another suggestion. I'm not sure what happened to that, though.
So back to this monthly allowance. This is raised, according to your piece, by a group called the Grotto Girls. Could you describe who these women, girls are?
They are a fan group who set themselves up because they were sick of being shamed for sexualizing Will White in quite an overt way. So what we would call locker room talk is pretty graphic, pretty gross. And they took pride in this, and that's fine. And they set up their own group, but they became quite good at branding. So they have they all use high heels and fire emojis in their names to get noticed. And I think they started realizing that if they acted en masse, so banding together and sending donations, banding together and sending gifts like a custom longboard, it would get them noticed and it would get them more attention from Will. So that's kind of where that came from. And they have been one of the main fundraisers of a monthly allowance for him.
Okay, that is extremely wild. And also, how do I get myself one of those allowances? I know there's a lot more we need to get into, but first we need to take a quick break so I can find someone to fund my allowance.
The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true. But shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. Trust me, you've never seen a mother-son duo like this before. The show is full of wit, scandal, action, and did I mention Julianne Moore? Something this audacious and sexy, as genre-bending as it gets. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Stars and the Stars app.
Where to Be a Woman is the podcast celebrating the best of women's well-being. I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor.
And I'm Saatchi Kaul.
And we're on a quest to find out where in the world women are living their best lives.
We're hearing from some incredible women about what their countries are getting right.
And picking the best bits for our female fantasy land. Because you can't build it if you can't imagine it first. Where to Be a Woman from the BBC World Service.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hey there, listeners. If you love our podcast, then consider subscribing to Slate Plus. It means you'll get no ads on any Slate show, including this one, and you'd really be supporting ICYMI. What we make every week wouldn't be possible without support. Slate Plus helps us keep our show going. You'll get bonus segments or extra episodes of shows like Slow Burn, Amicus, Political and Culture Gab Fest, Big Mood, Little Mood, Mom and Dad Are Fighting, the list goes on and on. You want to be listening to these. You'll also get unlimited reading on the Slate website, which means access to every article and advice column Slate has to offer without ever hitting the paywall. Just visit slate.com/ICYMI+ to sign up. That's slate.com/ICYMI+. All right, we are back. There was several points in your story where you talk about the fandom turning toxic, but the one that stuck out to me, mostly because it has a hilarious name, was Nanagate. Jessica, what is Nanagate?
Nanagate is a recent scandal in the whitey nation world. Essentially, White's cousin, Alex, who is also building a similar brand to White now, was sort of hinting, you know, we want to raise money for Nana. We want to get a GoFundMe together. We want to direct funds her way and pay her rent for a year. And Will was with him kind of encouraging this. And of course, it was never explicitly said, this is absolutely what we're doing. It was more, we want to do something nice for Nana. And all of a sudden the PayPal start rolling in and they're reading out, this person donated to Nana. Thank you so much, this person. And on it goes. So a lot of people sort of suddenly realize, you know, this is a man who has just taken $75,000 in a week, not that long ago. Why are we paying his grandmother's rent?
And so was this kind of a turning point in the fandom in terms of people realizing or suspecting that this is becoming a grift?
I'd like to think so. Certainly one of my interviewees contacted me off the back of the Nanagate scam to, you know, very passionately say that she had changed her mind and she didn't feel as supportive of him anymore because she felt it was obvious what he was doing. But a lot of them have doubled down. But I mean, these women are incredible in the way they've documented all of this and kept evidence. And obviously there's been a lot of crimes in terms of drama on both sides, but they really have been making every effort to log all of this grifty behavior, I guess in the hope something like this would happen and he'd be called out.
It's funny you say grift, right? Because that's a word that has legal implications. And it's not one that I didn't immediately also jump to, right? Scam culture is at an all-time high. But when you think about it, do you actually consider this to be a grift or a scam? Because he's not forcing these women to hand over bags of unmarked bills. He's just existing on the internet.
Absolutely. And this is why I kind of say it, and we'll repeat very clearly again, grifty behavior, because...
Our lawyer says thanks.
But in all seriousness, he's not doing anything wrong. You know, would most people engage in this behavior and be comfortable in what they're doing? I don't know. I've not seen the amount of money he's receiving, to be honest. So, but he's not breaking any rules. He's not really doing anything wrong. And he is a 22-year-old man being showered with affection and money and all of these other amazing gifts. By a bunch of women who hang off his every word. And I can see why it would be easy to succumb to that.
We've talked mostly about, I guess, White's behavior in all of this. But a huge thing that your piece got into was how toxic the fandom has become. There were kind of allegations of stalking, photos of his house being put up. Could you tell us a bit about that?
I've been trying to think of a way to describe it, and I would say the best way you can imagine it is Gen X meets Heathers and Mean Girls. It's like part plastics, part, I guess, serial killer-esque precision and madness and just ruthlessness. That is probably the best word to describe it. There is a lot of ruthlessness, which I guess is partly because the fandom is so online. You know, there's been cases where, and because I couldn't fit everything into the article, particularly where I couldn't produce receipts, but I've been told that one woman had pictures of her OnlyFans downloaded and then sent to her daughter. It can get really vicious.
And this is all conflict over, like, what exactly? Not supporting him enough? Calling out behavior in the fandom?
This is where it gets interesting, because I think a lot of the fandom now, as obsessive as they are about Will, they seem to be more obsessed with each other. It's like kind of transformed into its own thing. It did start out as one side wanting to sexualize Will and almost kind of smother him with their support in a way that the other side feels wasn't beneficial to him. But because that first group then started harassing detractors of White, it spiraled out of control because the other side started fighting back, and all of a sudden it's an eye for an eye. And it's, I think they're at a point now where no one really knows who started it or why it began. They just hate each other and they will not stop. And I sound like I'm describing West Side Story.
One of the places that I saw this kind of conflict play out was in the replies to your tweet when you tweeted out the piece. Can you tell us what the reaction to your piece was like?
A lot of people blocked me as soon as the article ran. So that reply section to me has a lot of holes in it. I've been told those holes are usually where people are swearing at me and telling me they hope this isn't my day job. But it's strange, isn't it? Because I think there was a mass effort to kind of comment on the piece and be like, no, this isn't what's happening, you've got it wrong, and this kind of desperation to have people see things from, and I'm using air quotes here, the positive side. But all it ended up doing really was reinforce exactly what was discussed in the article.
Jessica, was there anything that didn't make the piece but is burned into your head that our listeners should know about?
The infighting and doxing alone, I couldn't do it justice because I couldn't get enough receipts. And I also didn't have time, but there were moles going back and forth between the various factions. So people would infiltrate secretly. Nearly everyone in the fandom has two or three accounts where they will like go and defend themselves in a comment section if they're getting roasted, or they'll go and troll people secretly whilst also being a member of a different group. There have been leaks for that reason from different groups. They have coordinated block lists, and just it's nuts. And there's high levels of paranoia as well for that reason. They do not trust anyone.
So we've kind of skirted around this point, which is that this is a very unique audience that is mostly older women who are very publicly loving a younger man, where if the kind of gender roles were reversed, it'd be looked at a lot differently. How do you see Whitey Nation as different from that?
I mean, largely they are not. And the reason I can say this is because during my interviews, people who do consider themselves Will White devotees made it very clear that if their husbands were doing the same thing, if they were spending this money, if they were obsessing over a woman this much, particularly a younger woman, they would leave them. So that there is a bit of a weird dynamic where that they know what they're doing is a bit shady and creepy, as it would be if a man was doing it to a woman, but they also seem to get away from it. With that said, or get away with it, sorry. But with that said, there's also a huge emotional component. So when it was Valentine's Day, Will White did a live where he ate dinner in front of a camera by candlelight. His sister pretended to wait the table, all with his phone, on the basis that all of his fans could pretend they were eating dinner with Will. And these women planned full course meals. They made shrines to him, like little pictures so they could sit in front of it. There are pictures. There is like, I don't know many men who would do that on a mass scale for a woman they paid for on OnlyFans. But I could just have not found them yet.
Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today and strapping us into just one of the wildest roller coasters of a story we've ridden in a while on this show, which is saying something.
Thank you very, very much for having me. I am always very excited to talk about Whitey Nation, and it was a pleasure to be here.
Once again, that was internet culture digital anthropologist Jessica Lucas. You can find her work at Input Magazine regularly and also on Twitter. All right, that's the show. We will be back in your feed on Saturday, so please subscribe. It is the best way to make sure you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Tell your friends about us. Tell the middle-aged women in your life about us. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at icymi_pod. Or you can shoot us an email. We're icymi@slate.com. ICYMI is produced by Daniel Schrader, Rachel Hampton, and me, Madison Malone-Kircher. We're edited by Allegra Frank, and Alicia Montgomery is executive producer of Slate Podcasts. See you online, and here's where Rachel would say, or not.